And anything that's inside that red area was an area that was experiencing drought, according to the drought monitor out of Nebraska. And that's most of the cow-calf, most of the cattle country in the U.S. And quite a few of those states that are represented up there are states that it wasn't just last year. This is something that's been ongoing. Now, Ivan had mentioned that they had been dealing with it for a number of years. And this is the drought monitor as of August, this past summer. And you can see those red areas were some of the hardest impacted. Of course, this has changed as we've gone into the winter. But still, a good region of the country has been affected by drought. Now, some of us have actually dealt with back-to-back disasters. I know that, drought can be an ongoing thing. And when it's dry one year, that impacts how you deal drought the next year because maybe you don't have the hay stocks to carry over from year to year. Some of us in the southeast have dealt with back-to-back disasters going from too much water, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, to the situation basically a year later where it just wasn't raining at all. And what happens is that can actually impact us. It can impact our ranch resources, fences that are down. You know, that makes it tough when we're talking about trying to manage appropriately for drought if we don't go ahead and get those in place. Commodity storage, I mentioned that a little bit earlier. We had some areas that suffered some damage, and that affected us when it came time for the drought because that's when we really needed that bulk commodity storage. The key thing that I think we're going to point out here today is it's important to recognize what's going on early on. You know, there are a lot of signs. We've been talking about droughts since early on in the summer. This isn't something that we talked about as we got close to winter feeding. It was something we recognized early on. To recognize it and to do something about it, I think when we go through the scenarios and we've got our different producers up here, you're going to see the differences in early response to a problem. Now, one of the immediate concerns, and these were some comments from extension agents in the southeast, you know, they started talking about feedstuff, hay and pasture. I think that's the first thing that comes to mind when we start thinking about drought. But you really need to look at the overall picture. And the first place to really start is to inventory your herd and the resources that you have to go with your herd, whether it's acreage to grow different forages, whether it's some type of a structure, fencing situations, water sources. There are a lot of different things that we need to inventory and to really do a detailed inventory. And we'll talk a lot about nutrition today. And when we talk about the herd, not just the number of cows, but number of cows in different classes, different calving seasons to see where those herd nutritional resources are needed the most. So it's real important. And the thing you're going to hear over and over today is flexibility. You know, we can stand up here and we could go through a scenario where we calculate how much hay to feed through a winter. But there's got to be some flex in that. And a good example that I like to give is I know in the southeast we deal with a lot of round bales. And the assumption a lot of producers make that those round bales weigh 1,000 pounds apiece. But when you actually start weighing those bales and you actually get to feeding, you can be off by quite a bit. And over a small herd, it may not be as big a deal, but when you deal with larger herds, it can get to be pretty significant. And as scarce as hay supplies have been and as pricey as they've gotten to be, just those little fudge factors being off by a little bit, or, you know, say cow size, you are assuming nutritional requirements for a 1,000-pound cow, and maybe she's actually 1,100 or 1,200, that can make a pretty big difference. So in everything we say today, factor in that fudge factor, a little bit of flexibility in what you're doing. I'm going to turn it over to Ron, and he's going to visit with you a little bit on culling priorities. So I think that's a really good place to start when we talk about coping with drought.
If your culling strategy is your first drought management protocol, you're in trouble. If we look at culling as our main way to handle drought issues, what did I just do? Man? You already got it. Something. Technology's kicking my butt right now. Sir. All right. We look at trying to establish some culling criteria. If you're in the process of going into a drought and you've not really thought about it, you've not planned for it, and all you're trying to do is reduce cow numbers, you don't have a lot of flexibility. And there's a lot of expense associated with culling a cow herd. Everybody in here agree with that? You got a good set of mama cows, you don't want to sell them, right? But if the only alternative is to move those cows to market, that creates some real management issues and problems, I think, relative to cash flow issues, future opportunities as well. But I do think you need to have some type of culling protocol in place. If you've got some flexibility and you've got reserves of forage, of some, either hay or standing forage, it's important to use that as a management tool and not get into having to cull your cows every time you go into a dry period, because that gets extremely expensive. You go talking about drought management, it is not an easy process unless you plan for it. The further west you ranch, the more you have to plan for it, because you are constantly in a drought with interrupted by periods of flood. Now, you go east, you've got pretty good conditions sometimes interrupted with floods and then periodic droughts. So it's very different from one area of this country to another is how you deal with it. But as you go west, you certainly, and even north, I certainly have those periods of time we all experience drought. You just have to plan for it and not ever allow yourself to get in that kind of situation. And you'd like to think that situation doesn't occur, but I can take you to locations right now that look just like that with cows that look just like that. And there's all sorts of reasons for it. This is another slide that I think is very appropriate. Just read that bottom line. If we're in the second year of a drought in our part of the country and we're just now starting to talk about drought management, we need to talk about getting back in at that point in time. Because all the things we're going to talk about today, you need to put in a management plan for the next time you experience this and store this information away from you, because drought management starts at the end of the current drought. Y'all think about that. I heard that today. That's a very good statement. You start planning for the next drought when this one's over with and start looking at rebuilding, building flexibility into your system. And I think that's important that we do that. There's always going to be drought. Just when and how severe. I think you need to have a measured response, have a plan, act early, which is not something we're not prone to do in the cow-calf industry. Anybody in here early reactors? Even though they thought we were culling deep enough this time, did we cull deep enough the first time? We didn't quite have a plan to fit the current drought cycle. So I think that is something we have to do. Have a destocking plan, whatever it is, whether you're running a mix of cows and yearlings, you can move them yearlings immediately if you need to and conserve that forage for the base cow herd. So there's all sorts of ways to look at it. But the other thing is to stick to the plan. I don't know how many people know what needs to be done and just don't pull the trigger and don't do it in a timely fashion. There's been a lot of publications put together, this destocking strategies during drought. We've been talking about the last 2 years of drought. We wrote this in 96, and we've used it every year but two since then. Okay, so that's something we have to deal with on a constant basis, but looking at different strategies, and you can argue with the strategies outlined in that. But to me, you need to protect this year's income and next year's calf crop. And the way you protect next year's calf crop is by body condition and allowing those cows to rebreed. So get as many cattle as you can to survive the drought, maintain income as constant as you can through that drought. And that normally comes by selling open cows. And I put in their replacement heifer, and I get more argument over that because everybody wants to save those good genetics. Well, if you save them as you go into the bankruptcy court, it don't make a damn. Okay, so think about some things you're doing and make sure that you look at ways to cull those. Trying to optimize the performance of the remaining breeding herd and balance your requirements with forage supply. And if you're running stock pretty heavy all the time, you have very little time to react. So the sooner you accept or recognize a problem, the sooner you make stocking rate adjustments, the less cattle you'll have to cull. That's a hard concept for some people to get through their head, but if you start early enough, you start conserving forage, you can actually maintain a larger set of cows through a drought than you can if you react later. Okay, that's something that a lot of us just have a hard time getting our hands around, our mind around. But if you go hard and hard fast, you can maintain that core herd a lot easier. I'm going to talk about some levels on looking at culling cows and what percentages you might expect just based on some easy things to do. And I guess picking that low-hanging fruit and allowing to help get started in this process. Everybody knows cow sales or cull cow sales are a pretty significant part of your gross income every year. And seasonal trends are always there in the cow prices. It's accentuated during drought because most of them, people that aren't in this room and aren't listening, are holding those cows. They wean the calves, move them to town, and they're worth about half what they'd have been if they'd have done some early weaning and moved some cows earlier in the process. So looking at those seasonal trends and knowing what it is in your area and what kind of cows bring what, it allows you to look at some different marketing alternatives. And I use this scenario quite a bit. The area that I serve in Texas ranges from about a 24-inch rainfall to a 42-inch rainfall area, so there's a tremendous difference in how we manage within that area. And if you're managing over here in the higher rainfall areas, more productive regions, we're normally stock heavier, trying to take advantage of that forage before we have to bale it in hay or whatever. So you have very little reaction time if you're truly faced with a drought. It may not last as long as it does out in the western part, but we do have more time to respond to it out there because we're stocked more moderately. And so it actually is easier to manage drought in a low rainfall area to me than it is in a high rainfall area. I'm not going to get into the forage aspects of this, but if we don't manage the herd reduction properly, we won't get efficient use of whatever rainfall we might have during that drought. Very seldom do we have a drought cycle where there's just no rain. Now, it may be really limited, but there's normally some rain that'll fall, so you need to make sure you have enough residual forage to capture that. The problem we got into this year, everybody's done a good job managing forage, run out of water, because all of our cattle are watered off surface water, so if you're not running any water in stock ponds, then you've got another problem to face. So there's all sorts of issues you have to deal with there, and that's why what Jane said about inventorying your resources, knowing where your water sources are going to be, are critical in this process as well. This is actually a current photograph of a ranch out in West Texas. He's well past when he needed to destock. I'll leave it at that. I talk about some mistakes as I see them in destocking protocols, and this is the most common one at the top. I think it'll rain for long. Let's just hold on. That's never a good one if the drought lasts more than 2 or 3 months. And to me, a 2 or 3 month drought's not a drought. And so make sure that you have enough residual forage, residue, or whatever, hay, to make it through some short to moderate. Another one we see in our part of the country, and some of you may do this, and it may be a sound system for you, but they'll wean all the calves and keep all the cows. Now, weaning a set of calves does reduce nutrient requirements for that cow. It does reduce forage demand from that cow standpoint, but it doesn't do a great deal to conserve forage. And that's hard for a lot of us to accept as well. So that's why I have a little different approach a lot of times on destocking than some people do. I think it is important to always keep that process in mind, and Ivan's going to talk about that in a little bit and the benefits to doing it and what actually early weaning might constitute. The other thing that we see is people always want to keep the young cows in a herd and sell the old cows. Now, the head went to snapping around when I said that. Why would you want to keep the cows that are the least productive under harsh nutritional environment? The younger cows have the lowest rebreeding rate of anything in your herd. Granted, those older cows won't last as long, but they're their proven genetics. They've probably been through a drought before. The conception rate in those cows is about 20% higher in the same body condition than a set of young cows. So if you're looking at preserving next year's income, the older cows are much more likely to rebreed. Now, a lot of y'all are going to go away from here and say, he's still crazy as hay to eat them. We'll keep the young ones and sell the old ones. But think about it in that process, and maybe you'll start to look at some of those options that might be a little different than what you're currently doing. The biggest problem I see is that last one. They sell cattle and buy feed for what's left. They just keep selling enough to buy some more feed. At the end of a drought, what happens if that's your management philosophy? You're out of cows and you're out of money, right? So you need to destock early, hard, and put the money aside to buy back in. If we'd have sold cows last year when everybody was kept continuing to talk about this drought, what were those cows worth last year? In our part of the country, bred cows last fall bringing 12, 12 and a half. This spring they brought 9. Right now they're bringing 5.5 to 7. If you'd have sold a little bigger slug of them last fall, conserved forage, you could be buying $700 cows to go back on your country right now. So don't sell cows, buy feed, conserve that to make sure you plan for that next drought cycle. The longer you hold on, the worse the markets are. Make sure you look at that. Everybody knows feed prices go up. Anybody ever thought we'd see hay bring what it's bringing? 700-pound bales at Fort Worth, Texas, bring you $100 a piece in a heartbeat. We actually sold cows so we could sell hay, folks. I could make more money selling hay than I could running cows. And so there's all sorts of things to look at in the drought cycle in trying to maximize income and that sort of thing as well. We look at different destocking strategies. The first thing I think you ought to do is look at, if you're spring calving in particular, summer calving type situations, cull anything going into that summer that doesn't have a calf at side. And it's that simple. If she's lost a pregnancy, lost a calf, or is a replacement heifer. Well, I'm getting heresy now. I'm not selling the replacement heifers. But they're not going to produce any income, are they? And I'm going to talk a little more about those in just a minute. But if you look even at the SPA data across the nation, there's normally about 5% of the cattle that we palpate bred that don't have a calf at branding time. Through pregnancy loss, calving difficulty, whatever, there's normally somewhere between 5 and 10% on every operation that you palpated bred, kept in your herd, and they don't have a calf at branding time. Normal procedure is maybe to hold those cattle till fall when we go to shipping cows or whatever. But if you back up and really go to looking and you know there's going to be impending drought situations, either palpate what hadn't calved yet and cull those cows, and I'll talk about that as well in some later calving situations, but you'll normally identify 5 to 15% of your cows, depending on how strict you've been on culling, with that initial cut. And a 15% reduction in stocking rate is going to conserve a lot of forage, is it not? Okay, so that's the first place I'd look. But how deep you get to go that first cut depends on how strict you've been on culling practices in the past. Replacement heifers, and I'm as bad as anybody about wanting to sell replacement heifers. But that is something you need to think about. They're most susceptible to the drought, highest nutritional requirements, highest cost, lowest production, and here's the other side of that. They'll bring more money than the cows will when you sell them. Okay, so once again, sell those heifers, put that money aside to restock at a later time. And I just put this in there to confirm what we talked about, lower production. If those heifers were to drop from a condition score 5 to a 4, we're looking at what somewhere around a 20 to 30% drop in conception rate in that set of heifers. So that's one reason we say go ahead and move those heifers and try not to manage them through the drought because of the expense. Now, I'll take arguments on both sides of that. But if you sell those heifers, that results in about another 7 to 10% reduction in the number of cows you have on your place, if you're basing it on a 1,000, 1,200-pound cow or whatever. So you're now assuming that if you do the open cows that haven't calved or lost a calf and remove the replacement heifers off, and you don't necessarily have to sell those heifers, but I think looking at moving them off the property is a viable option, and go to dry lot development, a lot of different ways to manage those heifers to get them out of the forage base that you're running on at home. To me, there's less risk in moving heifers than there are cows into dry lot situations, so that's what we always look at moving first if we're going to try to keep anything. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that because we're going to talk about body condition later, but as we look at the number of calves that a cow's had relative to body condition, this kind of goes back to talking about those older cows, those 10-year-old or cows that have had 10 calves in this scenario. It didn't matter what condition they were in. They were breeding, weren't they? Okay? That's what I'm basing some of what I'm talking about in culling those younger cows that are more susceptible to harsh nutritional environment. If you move those heifers and those open cows that are in your herd out as soon as you can, you're reducing that herd from, I'd say, 12 to 25%. If you conserve 25% of your forage early in the growing season, you can certainly carry a larger percent of your cows throughout the remaining part of that year. Where you go next depends on your current management practices. If you have an extended breeding season, and we see this all the time in our area, if it gets dry, people will leave the bulls out longer, going to get more of the cows bred. Anybody in here want to testify that works? Doesn't. Normally, you just drag out your calving season, have just a few cows left at the end of that process that get bred. Those calves are born late in the heat. They don't ever develop very good, and they cost you about as much money as they're worth a lot of times to get through the process. So I'd recommend, if you don't have a really short controlled breeding season, a drought is a perfect time to get it. Everybody's always looking for an easy way to get a short calving season. Palpate, folks. Call those cows that don't fit and you're there. Okay? So I look at drought as an opportunity to do a lot of things different perhaps than you have in the past, but identifying those shortbread fall or summer calving cows. Normally, if you're not in a short 60-day breeding season, you'll pick up another 5 to 15% of those cows you can move out of the operation without hurting you a great deal. And if you do it early enough, folks, there's going to be idiots looking for bred cows at the same time you're culling your herd. So that, once again, I don't mean to get personal with anybody that's been buying cows. If you had plenty of grass, that's fine. But there are people that are still buying bred cows in the spring. In fact, I believe it's Dan, the optimist over there, that would be buying those cows. So look at that as another alternative in trying to shorten those calving seasons up to something that's a little more manageable. If you do all that, we're talking about now having 17 on a really highly managed set of cows, up to 40% of the cow herd would be moved out with those three destocking strategies. If you destock 40%, how much extra grass do you have for the rest of them? You could conserve a lot of forage by getting aggressive early in the drought cycle. And really, folks, other than the heifers, we've not hurt production or income at all. Now, and when you've got cattle up and going through the chute, there's other things to start thinking about other than those open cows and those sort of things. Palpate the cows. Jane wanted to give everybody a palpation sleeve and let them practice today, but I talked her out of it, don't you? But palpating those cows and trying to find out those late breeders, see what you've got in the herd. Make sure that you go through those cows while you've got them up that one time. Check for teats, problems, udder problems, feet, eyes, whatever might be a problem or impending problem, and sort those cattle. If you'll sort them then, if you have to sell more cattle, you don't have to go back through the herd again and disturb the whole herd. You can leave them alone. Those you aren't going to cull, aren't going to sell yet. It saves labor and time and those sort of things, so it makes a little more sense to me, particularly in the heat of a drought, not to get those cattle up and work them again, trying to sort out some cattle to cull. One of the last ones that on that list is disposition. In some of the southeast and Texas herds, we might want to move that to the top of the list in front of that open status, because there's always some cows we probably should have sold. By God, she brings a good calf to town every year, so we just keep her around. But she's a pain in the butt. And then she's got four or five daughters in the herd by now because she's always raised a good one. Cull them. Now's the perfect time to clean up a set of cows. All right. If you've gone through that, you'll normally pick up another 5 to 10% of your cows that have some problem, if you're honest, whether it be teeth or something else. So we're now at 25 to 55% of the cows have been identified for culling. And if you have to go beyond 55% of the cows and culling them, then you need to start deciding whether to sell out or not. Because at that point in time, do you have an economical production unit that you can spend the time, labor, fuel, and all those expenses in keeping that set of cows around? If you've got records on your cattle, you can cull those marginal producing cows. Everybody always wants to identify cows and make cows and calves up together, but there's a really good trick. Well, you've got those cows up in the lot, and you've got a few calves on them that aren't very good. Put them up in a lot, leave the bottom gate open. Whatever comes back to claim them, close the gate and haul them all to town. It's a pretty simple culling practice. Okay, so it's pretty easy to pick out those low-producing cows, even in a pretty large production system. They don't have to have all the records in the world to do that. But if you do have the records, use them, call those. We've got a man in outside of Jacksboro, Texas, runs a fairly sizable operation. They use feedlot closeout records to cull their cow herd. They were that sophisticated following those cattle through. They knew what cows were producing the most valuable cattle in their retained ownership program, and that's how they culled the cow herd. So whatever records you have, use them as well. Now, when you've got all Angus cows or something like that, breed type and color don't make a whole lot of difference. Dang, we don't have all of them look alike, do we? So if somebody's trying to build uniformity in a set of cows, now's another good time to do it. Frame size, because all of us have some cows too big, do we not? Some of us have something maybe a little too small. All those things can help build uniformity in next year's calf crop and add value to it. We go through all that, we can identify a lot of cows that could be culled or should be culled. And everybody says, my cows are better than that. Let somebody else come in there and cull them, see if they are. You ever done that? That's pretty eye-opening. They go looking at all the things you just come to accept. It may not be quite as good a set of cows as you thought they were. So once again, be open-minded about this and really look at, take a hard look at those cows. And this is the first time I've mentioned weaning calves, isn't it? To me, if you haven't gone through all those other culling steps, you're missing the boat. Make sure you move those cows out of the marginal. At least identify them, set them aside where you can move them if you need to. And at that point in time, you can wean calves. And Ivan's going to talk about some things that make me even think about some different alternatives as well. But I use the time of weaning as a tool to manage body condition on the cows. If I'm going to try to maintain more cows through a drought than I should, I'm going to have to wean earlier. So there's all sorts of ways to look at that. If you do wean those and you have the option of retaining or selling them, you used to be able to sell those lightweight cattle for a lot of money, huh? What about next year? Lightweight cattle aren't going to bring near what they did this year in the years past. If you hadn't done enough there, then I start looking at moving cattle. That's risky, costly, and biosecurity goes out the window. I know more wrecks relative to moving cows to other parts of the country than any other thing in beef cattle production I've ever heard of. So be careful about that. Conception rates are affected a great deal. I know some herds that have had come back with 15 to 35% of their cattle bred when they're moving back home, and that's just not something that you can afford to do. Then you can go into some other criteria as well, looking at age and body condition. Those are a little thinner. And Ivan has got some data that might dispute that, too. Those thinner cows will probably go ahead and breed back as well, particularly based on their age. But that's, once again, going in and cleaning up and making cattle more uniform. And this is where I come to quite a bit. If you still haven't got enough and you've identified 70% of your cows to sell, you've chapped somebody's butt pretty bad, and the good Lord's probably the one. Decide whether to liquidate or not. Or at that point in time, you really have to make the decision, are you going to mortgage the future and keep those cows around, just bear the brunt of the cost. Now, part of building flexibility in there is to have an emergency cash reserve where you can do that. Allow you to buy feed, keep that core set of cows around through the process and feed them if you have to, dry lot them if you have to, and make sure that you retain that nucleus and genetic base of your superior cows. You know, be prepared, react early, have some kind of plan, follow that protocol, try not to skip off of it too much. In our part of the country, the emotions probably have more to do with cow management than anything, particularly in the cow-calf side of it. It's kind of hard to get fond of a stalker, isn't it? He's always a pain in the butt. Them old cows, you kind of get to liking them. That's a dangerous thing in the cow business, to get to liking a cow. Because she is a commodity, she's a tool to manage forage. And if we get outside that, we're not truly using those cattle as they sound need to be done. But once again, have a restocking plan ready to go. I always try to get producers to think, be the first one out and the first one in. Talking about selling $1,200 cows, buying $700. You can do it right now. So once again, you could actually make money during the drought if you manage it correctly and go counter-cyclical to everybody else in the system. One day closer to the next rain, this all sounded pretty good about a month ago. We now have the wettest January in history at Fort Worth. So we had no grass. You can't grow winter pasture because the ground's too cool and it's rained all the time. So we're actually in a worse situation. We'd have been in, particularly last year when it was dry during the winter, the cattle did great. But now we've got a cold, wet winter, and it's actually harder on the cattle than I just assumed it not rained in our part of the country until this spring, but that's not what we're dealing with. I used that little saying at the bottom that back in 96, and I gave a talk similar to this at the Beef Cattle Short Course. I said, I don't care what God you pray to, get after it. You know, we needed some rain at that point in time, and Jim McAdams, when I don't use it, he always fusses at me, so I got to where I put it back in some slides. He thought that was a good thing. Timing has everything to do with success of a rain dance. Jane happened to have this picture, and I was talking about it earlier. Be careful how much you ask for. And it can come in various forms, can it not? How many of you left white country to come over here? It comes in various forms. Some of it will be a little hard when it hits sometimes as well, but it was getting to the point I didn't care if it was hard or white or what, as long as it fell out of the sky and was wet. And so I think we need to look at different options of destocking and try to manage our forage base the best we can. Jane, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Ron. Ivan's going to talk quite a bit about early winning because I think that's what we've led into, and of course, Ron's going to cover body condition scoring. But I'm going to let my producers off the hook if we'll just do one other thing. They passed out the...